SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online. And at our website, stevebick.com, it is another just damp and gross, I'll tell you, this is some fall. Awful. And just was discussing on Twitter, giving a little feedback on the off-the-turf decisions. And when it comes to Belmont, anyway, today, as racing resumes, builds toward Saturday's Super Saturday card and into the holiday weekend, off the turf, the 2nd, the 5th, and the 9th today, the 4th, 7th, and 8th remain on. And the question was posed, what are they, flip a coin? No, they don't flip a coin. The two allowance races stay on if they can. Ideally, I mean, you want allowance races, whether they're state breds or open. And the fourth race is an open allowance going six. And then the state bred fillies and mares going a mile in the eighth. And those two stay on. You also base the decision on, you know, which of the courses are drying better. And, you know, which one is holding up? I mean, we were so close, it seemed, to making it through. And then here came more unexpected weather. It's just unbelievable and unrelenting. You know, the other portion of the decision is based a lot of times on MTOs. You know, Andy and I talked about this last week. And, for instance, the ninth race happens to have been a nice two-year-old filly race going six on the inner for state bred two-year-olds. And had a full field of 10 with three AEs and then three MTOs. So there's 16, the full 16 complement. And a race like that, three MTOs figure to stay, figure one or two of the AEs probably stay in, and three or four of the body of the race. So that race will hold together. So you could take a race like that off. It happens to be the nightcap, and it should hold together pretty well. So those, it's a lot of working parts. It not easy. Not easy on anybody. Not easy on the horsemen, owners. It vexes everybody. Meanwhile, speaking of owners and speaking of getting some horses distributed into new homes and get their careers started, I caught on late yesterday to having missed that the Mid-Atlantic sale that was taking place. And the two-day activities, I'll touch on it with Sid later in hour two. 338 yearlings changed hands, $7.3 million. Overall revenue was down, actually, from last year on less horses sold, 312 last year for $7.8 million. The average was down, but the median was up, and buyback was well down. So it's kind of a, you know, some either circumstance and some interesting, you know, whatever dynamics made that happen. It's kind of mixed signals. A $210,000 Into Mischief filly went to the Wyckoffs, the Three Diamonds, and that topped the auction. Candyland offered her up. And, you know, here's a perfect example. Maryland bred and Delaware certified. First foal out of Spin the Bottle. Heartspun mare. So, you know, we talked about the Virginia certified. And as it happens, speaking of Virginia certified, going to be joined by Debbie Easter this morning. Debbie will join us before hour two. The Virginia Equine Alliance and all the proverbial ducks are in a row. after yesterday, and they're set. The team that is involved in the reopening of Colonial Downs and the Horsemen, as represented by Debbie, yesterday, the rules were formalized, and when Governor Northam signed the bill allowing for historical racing, they put a 180-day time frame on it, that the rules had to be adopted within 180 days. Why that was important, I don't know. But the Racing Commission, they were handed a set of rules that they didn't completely agree with, frankly, and that they agreed to. All the three commission members, they all had kind of interesting comments, if you happen to have seen this in the Richmond paper. The Times-Dispatch had a piece. Graham Mumaugh, the writer, and there's been a couple of writers following this story with Colonial Downs. So we'll expand on it with Debbie, but what was interesting about this is the way they've decided to apportion machines. Up to 3,000 historical racing machines can be installed around the state, and the team from Revolutionary Racing, who are putting a lot of money into this. And the, you know, the one part of this that I didn't realize until the other day, and I sent out a tweet last night, if you didn't see it, this from a couple of weeks ago in the Virginia Gazette. And the Revolutionary Racing guys, John Marshall, and I'm going to forget the other partner's name, they are putting a ton of money in to not just get Colonial up and running again. They're remodeling the entire facility. And, you know, okay, yes, Colonial was sitting, you know, for 3-4 years empty or not being used, but they're completely renovating the building. And they're going to brand their historical racing parlors and their betting parlors, their off-track parlors, under the name Rosie's Gaming Emporium. They got a logo, and that's going to be the brand. And they're going to be allowed to open, I believe, 4 off-track facilities. And, of course, Virginia Equine Alliance, they've been maintaining the existing off-track facilities. And Virginia has got one of the most lucrative potential markets for off-track wagering in the country, that being Northern Virginia, where nobody can make a bet. It's really, and particularly because so many people living in Northern Virginia, Alexandria, McLean, you know, all along the river, and you know, just south of Maryland and D.C., there's no wagering. I mean, it's a huge population, and nobody can make a bet. And it's always been a contentious topic. And they've had some referendums over the years. I don't know when the last one was, but it that's a marketplace. You know, we're looking for added revenue. Let's you know, the initiative in Georgia and Northern Virginia. I mean, and from what I can tell, Northern Virginia does not get one of these parlors and off-track facilities. So Deb will fill us in on the latest, but the target date to reopen Colonial for simulcast wagering and for, you know, the historical racing machinery, March is the target date. So we'll get all the updates, but racing back to Virginia, and happy for the people, particularly Deb Easter, the work she's put into this, really at the expense of her own business interests, her own career as a pin hooker, and you know, the work that she does in her bloodstock trade. She's terrific on that front, and she has dedicated so much time and effort toward the future for racing in Virginia. So looking forward to talking to Deb. And I mentioned Pete Fornatel. Sid, of course, Sire Watch Pedigree Vocus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, top of the hour. Jeremy Plonk, I've been trying to catch up with Jeremy the last couple of weeks, and one of his busiest times about, it's already kicked off, between Breeders' Cup broadcast preparations and the Breeders' Cup shows that have already been run, but Keeneland too. And of course, Jeremy has his terrific analysis on the Keeneland website. So we'll get a little Keeneland preview, the opening day card. Drawn yesterday, the Grade 2 Phoenix will serve as a Breeders' Cup sprint prep. Just a field of six. I mentioned yesterday it didn't look like it was going to be a big field, but promises fulfilled. Draws the rail again. He's drawn inside three straight races. He was in the two-hole in the Amsterdam. He was on the one-hole in the Jerkins, and the one-hole for the Phoenix. I guess it's fine for him, considering he's going to quarter horse it out anyway. Whitmore the two with Santana. Still, I'm sure, on a high after the five-stake win night at Remington. Distinctive B, Peter Miller, not afraid to ship. And considering he's got what he's got going on in Santa Anita Saturday in the sprint championship with Roy H. But Distinctive B for Rockingham. He's going to try Graded State Company for the first time. Limousine Liberal, of course. Keeneland is home track, although he's arguably better at Churchill. Coming off the forego third, and of course had won at Belmont. Cuts back to six here from the seven. Hartwood, Jim Chapman. Haven't talked to Jim in a while. Forget we talked. I don't know if we talked about Hartwood, but what did he win? Jim Chapman won with a filly. Was the filly last year. Dalmore. And this is interesting. This is kind of an interesting maneuver by Ron Paolucci and Anthony Quartarolo. They're going to cut him back. Not so crazy. And slap the blinkers on. And the Alcibiades. Big field of fillies. Including Into Trouble, Ben Colebrook. Could be a Ben Colebrook double. Restless Rider. Big Intentions for Kenny McPeak. Lady TNT for Joe Sharp. Many, many more. Just getting going. Pete Fornatel kicks it off after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's something for Pete. Pete, good morning.
Good morning to you. I don't know that one, but I was totally digging it. What were we listening to? What brought us in today?
Beirut.
Okay. I've heard
Beirut.
Things.
Yeah, very very cool. And it got the. I sent it along to Case. It got the Casey seal of approval too. And there we go.
The coveted Casey seal of approval.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because you know he's got his own pale of civilization for musical appreciation and taste and interest. So if I like it and he likes it, it passes the gauntlet.
It's probably pretty good. I'm going to go ahead
exactly.
And just say that right now.
We were overdue for a little makeover on the musical front. So and the minute it came up, I said, "Oh, good, this might be new to Pete." Nice,
indeed.
Nice. I love it. Well, Pete, we're starting to get ready. And last week we talked about, you know, all the intense racing leading up toward Breeders' Cup and the opportunity for contest players. And it certainly got off to a big start at Belmont Saturday in the Super Qualifier, the first of these three Super Qualifiers. And some familiar names that dotted the leaderboard. And I've been waiting for, you know, the recap this week. I haven't brought it up other than mentioning, you know, that it took place. So I know that you're tied into a few of these guys, and I also reached out and congratulated one this morning who didn't even realize he had gotten his second seat.
That's so funny. I don't know how
it's great.
Because it was a great ratio, too, right? It was something like 1 in 15 out of the Belmont Super Qualifier. So I think the top four go. Philip Lamb was best with a pretty impressive bankroll, nearly 5,000, 4,775. Jeff Busson, who I've written about in the paper, in the Daily Racing Form before, comes second. One of the names, he seems to be at the NHC every year, and really the guy at the center of the connection between professional wrestling and horse racing, a connection that I, of course, share, being a friend and co-author and editor of several pro wrestlers, including my man Chris Jericho. But Basil DeVito runs third and fifth. He had the thing surrounded and will be back at the NHC. Basil, always a pleasure to talk to. Just such a tremendous knowledge and great ideas when it comes to contests and marketing racing in general. And just a pleasure to get going with old Hulk Hogan stories as well all the time. And then Dave Nichols, whom I had the pleasure of meeting out at the World Horse Players Tour debut event, also punched a ticket to the NHC with the two DeVito entries sandwiching around Dave Nichols. So definitely some names I'm familiar with, and great to see the roster expanding of folks we're going to get to hang out with in Las Vegas in what's really just a few months away. It seems farther away than that, I think, as we're because of the whole pre-Breeders' Cup. This next month really feels like a countdown to the BC, and for good reason. But these qualifiers, these super qualifiers, are a good opportunity for those who are still on the outside looking in to punch their tickets to Vegas with favorable ratios. For me, if I were saying, hey, this is on my bucket list, I want to go to the NHC, or if you're one of these people who goes every year, the way that I would target going, in addition to playing in live band contests that have NHC seats as part of the prize pool, these 1 in 15 ratios are favorable, in my opinion, to what you're going to find online. So it makes sense to target them, and we've got a bunch of new players headed to Vegas as a result coming out of Belmont last weekend.
Well, and there were some double qualifiers. What was funny, the person I reached out to was the one and only Andy Berg, Gumpster Stable, and Andy finished 7th, and in fact, the 7th, 8th, 9th finishers, Andy Berg, Dave Wolf, and Ralph Magnetti, they all got seats because there had been 7th, 8th, and 9th got the 3rd, 4th, and 5th seats because there were double qualifiers already. Dave Nichols had already double qualified, and I think Lamb also had I think Lamb had already double qualified anyway. Jeff Bussin, Basil DeVito, Andy Berg, Dave Wolf, and Ralph Magnetti are the recipients. And Andy, so I wrote to Andy, I said, congratulations on the NHC seat. He said, why? Did I get another one? I said, well, the one Saturday in the super qualifier. He said, no, nobody told me.
That's so funny. The other wrinkle is you can only win one NHC seat per event. So with Basil running third and fifth and Dave running fourth and sixth, that might have gotten yet another one. So that's not too bad. I think there were 65 players to be able to run ninth and punch your ticket to Vegas. That's not too bad. And I guess it just shows Basil and Dave both having big days and just riding it out, not getting cheeky at the end and looking to get it all on one entry, but continuing to play them independently, presumably covering different horses and increasing their chances of a couple of high-up finishes. So lots of goals met on Saturday, and that's very funny about Andrew Berg.
One thing that Andy said also, you should have you ever written about Andy?
No, I think I need to, obviously.
Oh, you should, because he's one of the most, first of all, he's hysterical. He's also as acerbic as can be.
He
from a racing standpoint, he races all over the place. I mean, the Gumpster horses show up in every nook and cranny. He claims like an octopus with eight arms. He's a quintessential horse player and a major league character. So Andy Berg would be a great candidate to write about. Phil Lamb's win was interesting because it was something that Andy said. Andy thought that this was a strange format, the $50 win place, that it It was just kind of...
Oh, that's right. It wasn't an all... It wasn't your normal live bankroll, is that right? There was a wrinkle?
Yeah, $50 win place wagers. And he thought it was kind of a cumbersome, I think, best description, format. But Phil Lamb, for his part, he really rallied because he hit the Street Lover. And then he came back in that nightcap where you had Lion in Wait on the best part of the turf course kind of re-rally and beat the Barkley tag runner, that Ferdinanda, kind of snatching potentially wins away from people. I think that it were ready to cash tickets at the last second. Lion in Wait surged back. But he also hit late races at Gulfstream and Laurel. Those were the other two venues. So Phil Lamb must have gone from last to first in here.
That's wild. It's interesting. We're seeing more creativity with formats. And I think what one of the things some tracks are trying to do is find ways to create live bank contests where the money's getting churned at the host venue, but there's still a little bit more of an opportunity for players adept in the mythical formats and who aren't comfortable making that big bet on the end that traditionally wins the live bank events. So it does, I mean, you can also see something like that in a live bank contest where with some of your last bullets you cold cock something and make that last to first. But it's interesting to see a live bank format where a few long shots near the end can get you up and running almost a little bit more like a mythical format. I'm curious to talk to Dom Labetti over at NYRA, see how it all went, how the format played out in his estimation, and I wonder if it's something we're going to be seeing more of. But I always love the creativity. You know, I can come on here and I can pick what I see as holes potentially in some other contest formats, but I love the fact that contest directors are feeling free to be experimental and keep looking for new ideas and things that might work. I still think Joe Applebaum was right when I interviewed him. Gosh, it was over a year ago now. I interviewed him after his tough pick six beat at Saratoga, not this year, but the year before. And he said that if contests were a baseball game, we'd be in the fourth inning. In other words, there's still going to be a lot of evolution before we find the formats that probably will go forward and keep this thing rocking and rolling over the course of the next few decades. So I always admire and think it's a good idea when folks are playing around trying to come up with new creative things. And you see interesting things like the run Lamb apparently had at the end here.
Well, one of three super qualifiers, and those that are either looking for a second seat or if you're still going after your first seat, get going and get an opportunity. We'll lay them out as they come close. And a quick rundown beyond the names we just gave you, past Andrew and David and Ralph, Matt Levy was 10th, Conrad Kleinbub, Ryan Muller, Stelios Candias, Charlie Welch, and Joe Rich. There's your top 15.
A good mix of names. Several people in there with whom I haven't spoken, and I'm definitely going to bother you offline, Steve, for the Andy Berg contact information. I'm set with this week's piece. But I'm I need something to write about for next week for DRF, which actually your listeners might be interested in this to learn if you haven't seen my pieces in the forum the last couple of days. Still very much working for DRF, my key client, as it were, going to be now doing three podcasts for them, the DRF Players Podcast on Tuesday and Friday, as usual, as well as adding a sports betting podcast / just general sports podcast called the DRF Sports Forum Pod. But I'm back to being freelance. My role in the World Horse Players Tour makes this a very good thing for me to be able to represent those interests while still helping out DRF as a key brand ambassador and contributor. But on the writing side, I'm going to go from, instead of writing four pieces a week, where they want me to try to get the best of the stuff all in one shot. And so don't be alarmed if you don't see me there as much as usual. You'll still have plenty of me, especially on the podcast side, to get sick of me if you're a DRF fan.
Well, the people love, and the sports betting aspect, the sports forum. In fact, I owe Mandy a call on that. I've gotten a couple of notes from DRF. For those that haven't seen the sports forum, there's going to be more and more of it. Obviously, I mean it's just evolving fast.
Absolutely, I'm looking forward to delving in to some of the topics, some of the ways that they look at the world. I think it's interesting because it's got this sort of old school betting way of looking at the world through trends and things like that, coupled with a pretty powerful algorithm. And then also you have some really good handicappers looking at those two pieces of data and coming up with their selections. Every week I'll have at least one person from the sports forum on. We're not going to go through all the games. I'm going to try to do something a little bit different with this show. There are so many sports betting shows now. I'm kind of envisioning a three-segment deal where part of it is a roundtable and giving picks. I'll always have somebody from sports forum on there. I'm going to try to have JK as much as possible because, you know, as much as he's known as a horse racing handicapper, this guy knows a lot of football. I mean, you don't coach Texas high school football without having a very solid knowledge of the X's and the O's, and I like that he can bring that actual football experience coupled with the gambler's mentality. You know, you don't always see that. The X and O guys on TV aren't that often talking about the world from a gambling perspective. I'm hoping JK is going to bring that to the show. And then I'm also hoping to have other segments, one where I just sort of tell stories from my own betting experiences or little essays almost, but not written, just me talking. I'm going to see how it works. I'm going to play around with it. I have one in my head for today that I want to do. And then I'm going to bring in guests. My first guest is going to be from the baseball world ahead of the MLB playoffs, my old buddy Rob Nyer, who is a really important baseball writer, one of the first guys to really bring sabermetrics into the mainstream. He was a Bill James assistant at one point in his career. He was a consultant on the book Moneyball. And he's a guy who I think will have a really interesting perspective. Well, not a pro gambler by any means, somebody who I think will be great talking about the intersection of analytics and traditional baseball watching and how that affects the way that we bet, especially ahead of the playoffs this year. So it should be a fun conversation, and I'm looking forward. It's going to be challenging. You know, I know this world, but I don't know it like I know racing. So it'll be something new and different, and hopefully we'll have something to contribute to the conversation, and we'll sell a few sports forums along the way.
Nice. Keeping tabs on this front as well, and we'll see where. Yeah, I think when it comes to the conversation about you mentioned the analytics, the most interesting parallels that are going to, I think, you know, for our purposes, is going to be around, and I see this discussion online already, is going to be around the information and, what is available for free and what is got to be procured and paid for. And this is a discussion that, the industry, that our industry grapples with. We had this discussion with Robin Howlett about his platform, Handicapper, and, what is in the public domain and, the open source information and analytics, and then, what is going to be, premium price based. And there's a discussion that we don't have as much as we should. That's one of the reasons we had that visit with Robin, and I want him to come back too.
I know my
all
friend,
of the. All the statistics, everything that is. I mean, who owns the statistics? I mean, the horsemen and the owners it's their animals, and they're providing the basis for the information. At what juncture? And I asked this question of Alan Foreman in advance of Robin Howlett's visit. And DRF is part of this of what transpired, the record keeping, but the ownership of that information and those statistics that then can be interpreted and not manipulated in a bad way, but manipulated for handicapping purposes. I understand it costs money to maintain the information system, but you know, a certain percentage of it should be out in the public domain and usable. And it's one of the things that is undoubtedly inhibiting the growth of handle.
For sure.
And it's something that the industry doesn't seem to be interested in addressing.
Well, it's hard because, like so many things in horse racing, you've got people looking at the next quarter, where there are certain entities, including my former employer slash key client, who are making plenty of money off of selling data to a limited set of people, databasers, computer guys, professional horse players, etc. And, you know, it's hard for them, understandably, they're not really in a hurry to let go of income that they're getting from having that data be their proprietary thing. But then if you look out, like you said, Steve, into the larger industry, and I don't know all the machinations, I know very few of the machinations of the backstory of how we got to the situation we are with the data, but you look at what's going to grow the industry as a whole that will benefit everybody, and obviously, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about it that having more information out there for people to develop into apps and other 21st century ways of looking at racing, a different model is probably better. And I know our friends at the Thoroughbred Idea Foundation have strong ideas about this. I don't know what business deals are in place, and I understand that the people who currently are getting paid to release that data to a select group aren't going to want to give that privilege up for nothing. But I wonder if, looking at the big picture, if there isn't a way to get them, those entities, fair compensation while opening up the marketplace in a way that's going to eventually benefit everybody, including them. I don't have the answers, but I do think it's an interesting question, and I think you make a great, I understand how we jumped off it from sports betting, because it's a real contrast between, you know, those numbers getting used for every fantasy sports league in the world, and the way that fantasy, then that money, all the attention that comes because of fantasy and because of gambling, pours money back into the leagues in the form of television rights. Obviously, in our business model, where the industry is making money on every dollar bet, boy, you could see the potential for explosive growth if a fair arrangement could come up where that data were to get freed. And I'm definitely interested. I don't think it's next on their dance card or anything, but I know it's an issue of interest to Craig Burnick and Pat Cummings at the Thoroughbred Idea Foundation, and you know, the thorough job they've done so far in terms of looking at the breakage question. I think it'll be interesting when they turn their attention to this and see if there isn't a way we can create a little bit more of a marketplace that's going to be friendly to an entirely new potential generation or generations of bettors who will help keep horse racing very healthy and happy. But I do understand it's not as simple as just free the data. There's stuff that has to go on based on the history and what's fair to the people who are currently sort of in control of that.
Well, this is certainly, as I said with Robin during the summer, a topic, you know, that it can be visited really any time. I mean, if I want to make a comparison between, you know, my own personal, you know, digestion of statistics, I mean, I subscribe to Baseball HQ, and pay Yeah, exactly. And, you know, pay for that information. And I'm happy to, because it's numbers crunched for me. I mean, I don't have that same interest in crunching those kinds of numbers in terms of baseball stats, and you know, the depth of, and quality of that information for the price is outstanding. And if you were a baseball bettor, you could use it as much as you did do as a fantasy player. And then you compare that to a Thorograph and paying for Jerry Brown, which I'm happy to do as well, given, you know, what, I mean, Jerry's not just giving premium performance figures, you're getting unique application of his work to stallions and to trainer stats as well. And to me, it's cheap for what it provides. So I mean, I know it's an individual player ratio, expense ratio against your personal handle and potential ROI, but I find it, you know, I find it compelling with what happened with Robin Howlett. And Ed Bain is another. I mean, Ed Bain, you know, he's the Don Quixote of open source.
That's fair. And I think it's two different things, right? We're talking about, on one hand, you've got the raw data and people who want to take that and turn it into something. And then you're always going to have people who are using that data and applying their own, they're not just taking raw numbers and applying equations there, doing so much more to it. Obviously, Andy Beyer, Jerry Brown, you mentioned, the Ragusan group. People are still going to be willing to pay for that stuff and should be expected to. When we talk about free data, we're talking, I think, more about the raw stuff, so people like Robin have a chance to develop it. And for me, it comes down to finding a way to communicate with the next generation of horse players. I just don't think they're going to learn the game the way some of them will learn the game the way that we did, sure. But I think if you want to maximize this great sport, what I truly believe is the best gambling game in the world, to people who grew up always knowing what an iPhone was, we're going to need some. We have some great creative things out there. You know, as big a fan as Timeform US as could be, but it'd be great to continue the evolution. And I think that, you know, there's some folks out there who have some good ideas about how that might go down. And I don't think it's going to prevent people from buying the racing form. It's such an elegant. Those PPs are put together in a way that you get a bunch of numbers from a text file. It's not going to be the same thing. And of course, then you also put in the fact that, you know, thousands of hours have gone into coming up with the specifics of the information in there. It's not just like taking raw data and giving it to people. So I agree. I think there's room for both of those visions as we go forward.
Yeah. Pete, weekend coming up, quick survey of what lies ahead.
It's all about, at DRF tournaments, it's all about the upcoming Keeneland contest at this point. We're really on the heels of it now. So you're going to have a lot of opportunities to win your way in and get yourself to Lexington for what's just become a bigger deal every year, the Keeneland contest. And also, the days right before the Keeneland contest, it's the Orleans Fall Classic, and you're going to have a lot of people trying to win their way into that. There's some free opportunities up this week also on DRFT, folks looking to start their journey to the World Championship Handicapping. That's another thing that can be looked at. There is a feeder for Aqueducts Challenge coming up. And they've just started, for those of you thinking ahead to next year, launched some Horse Player World Series feeders. And then the last thing that you can start thinking about on DRFT for your fall contest activity is the Del Mar Fall Challenge, which is, I think, also going to be, it's right on the heels of the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, November 10th and 11th at Del Mar. But it's still a great opportunity to get out to this Del Mar fall meeting, and with the strong contingent of SoCal players, they're not going to have any problem getting an impressive field. And then feeding is going to begin for the next Pegasus World Cup betting championship qualifier on DRFT. That one, of course, happening in conjunction with the Pegasus itself early next year, the next qualifier being November 3rd. And my piece coming up in a little bit on DRF, actually I have to sit down and write the thing, but that's going to be the story of Ray Arsenault, who for the second year in a row has qualified for this contest, that he was one of the people who helped inspire and come up with the format. And he gave me some great stuff about the origins of the Pegasus contest, which I think I found it inspiring. It was just a great example of how horse players can really make a difference by making positive contributions to the conversation about what tournament formats should be and ideas that are very horse player friendly, namely in this instance, just the bankroll. The house puts up the house puts up the purse. So the story of how that came to be, I'm looking forward to sitting down and writing that today, and that will appear shortly online and in the pages of Daily Racing Form.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, have a terrific week, and we'll check in next week. We'll see where everybody stands. And regarding those super qualifiers, the next one will be at Fairgrounds, which seems crazy that we're talking Fairgrounds, but 6 weeks away, less than 6 weeks away from opening. In fact, four and a half maybe. You can put it on your calendar. Christmas in New Orleans, December 22nd is the next super qualifier, and also January 5th at Santa Anita, as we are within, 4 months of NHC. So keep that in mind. Pete, as always, I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem at all. I'll be in London next week, one of my first freelance gigs. I'm doing some UK television over the weekend, looking at some of these final Breeders' Cup preps. Going to hang out for the week, so I'll be in London when we chat next week.
Very cool. I love it. And, of course, the ARC coming up on Sunday, and we'll see about the ground. They say the ground is going to be a little foot rattling, and so some horses, including Cracksman, may not participate. Cracksman, which would make him, I would think, more likely to come to Breeders' Cup than less, because he would set his sights on Champions Day on October 20th, and so then instead of doing an ARC Champions pairing, he might very well do a Champions Breeders' Cup pairing. So a lot of this coming into focus, and the help of Pete and Steve Anderson and Marcus Hirsch, when it comes to Nick Luck as well, will of course start to tap veins on all fronts to get a handle on the Euros and a big contingent for the Juvenile Turf Sprint, the Juvenile Turfs, the mile's going to be very heavy international presence, all the usual. So we'll start to get on top of that. Pete Fornatel, everybody, looms boldly on Twitter and DRF, and now more places than ever. Let's take a break. We're going to go to Virginia. Debbie Easter, the Virginia Equine Alliance, which has done a remarkable job. They kept the ball in the air. They kept pushing the peanut. And yesterday, the Virginia Racing Commission agreeing to the rules that will govern the 3,000 historical racing machines that are going to help fuel a rebooting of racing in Virginia at Colonial Downs and beyond too, because don't forget that you got all the chase meets around Virginia. Virginia may actually, I'm just thinking, Virginia probably hosts more chase events than any state in the country, right? Got to. Yeah. You got Middleburg and Montpelier and Great Meadow and Little Washington. That's like eight right there. Debbie Easter next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's dancing behind movie scenes, behind the movie scenes. Sadi Rani, she's the one that keeps the dream alive. From the morning past the evening to the end of the life. Brian Poole, Asher on the 45. Well, it's a Brian Poole, Asher on the 45. Brian Poole, Asher on the 45. Well, it's a Brian Poole, Asher on the 45.
We're back at the races, about 10 minutes to the top of the hour. Sirewatch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale in just a little bit with Sid Fernando right now down to Virginia, where the work has paid off. It paid off in just an absolute rebirth that is already happening. And Debbie Easter joins us from the Virginia Equine Alliance with the latest update, and it's pretty much all good news. Debbie, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. It's good news. We're moving forward, and that's always a great thing in our industry.
Very much, and especially given where things were. Now it is 4 years. I guess it is 2014, and the attempt to gain interest in either leasing the facility at Colonial Downs originally, or maybe a new multi-use facility that, you know, which seemed you know, given that there was a beautiful race course and one of the best turf courses in the country sitting there at New Kent, it seemed crazy to have to build something. And it all kind of came together. And the historical racing machines that seemed like such a goofball concept when initiated, whether it was at Oaklawn and even Frank Stronach tried to put them together and do something with it. And they have been such a boon to the, you know, a variety of venues. And the fact that Virginia ends up, you know, benefiting, it seems pretty improbable, but it all came together.
No, it's great. It's they've been such a help. Well, obviously at Oaklawn, everybody knows what they've done for the purses, and in Kentucky, they're, you know, everybody hears about Kentucky Downs, but what they don't probably realize as much is that what it's doing for purses and how it's helping Ellis and other places and keeping those horses in racing in Kentucky that used to always go out of state. And, you know, we just had no way to compete because every state around us that had racing had some other form of alternative gaming. And, you know, we just never gave, we probably, looking back at it, I think all the regulators, we overregulated the original Colonial Downs and didn't give them enough of a revenue stream to be successful, or the horse industry itself. And hopefully this is gonna be something that changes that. But the exciting thing is that Colonial's gonna be open. We're gonna be running again. I can't tell you officially the dates, but I think it's gonna be sometime next fall. And I think we're gonna lay out a 5-week, 15-day meet, and we're gonna make some noise when we announce it.
Well, and of course there's the breeding portion and the races that have been hosted by the Maryland Jockey Club in the interim, the Commonwealth Derby, the Commonwealth Oaks, and the like. And in fact, just a couple of Sundays ago, the four Virginia races. We'll talk about the benefits to the, you know, to the breeding side and the success of the Virginia Certification Program and that portion. Let's get just a quick survey of your thoughts about how the commission handled what was a pressing deadline. When Governor Northam signed the legislation, there was a 180-day drop-dead date for rules to be adopted, and the rules governing, you know, the size of the communities that could host machinery and how many machines and all of that kind of technical aspect. And there was a bit of consternation, Deb, it seemed, this week and right through yesterday when the rules were agreed to with a 3-0 vote, that there's a bit of a limit on how much expansion could be utilized going forward. Explain and how the equine interests are viewing the way the rules came down.
Sure. Well, so we have to step. Sometimes you have to step back and look at the macro picture. And the macro picture is at the end of December 2017. The industry had completed a 5-year plan that said, basically, hey, we need instant racing here because we need a new revenue stream if we ever expect to have Colonial open, and if we ever thought by October 9th is when it becomes law of 2018 that we would have 3,000 machines and Colonial Downs reopening, I think we would all be jumping for joy, and so. So in that respect, we're very happy, but we do have some worries, about the limits on the machines. Per our projections, 3,000 machines isn't quite going to do enough to get us to the purse levels we need long term, and help us expand our incentive programs, which are bringing horses here and really helping the farms and agriculture. So we do have some worries there. There's some limits on the localities, and some of the smaller localities are limited to 150 machines, and the you know, they don't take in account the overall, let's say, like down near Martinsville, where the range of population would include Greensboro and Winston-Salem and a million people within about 60 miles. And so we're a little worried that about those regulations, but we understand the concerns maybe of the politicians about not starting too big too soon. This is a big step for Virginia. Remember, we only have the lottery here. So we're very appreciative for what we have, and we hope once we do a good job, show them that racing's coming back, the industry's coming back strong, that we can get some movement, and they'll give the commission the ability to move those numbers if the market deems necessary.
The addition of the satellite locations and the existing structure of off-track betting in Virginia, another part of the equation. Talk about where things stand on that front, because that's been, you know, the revenue source that actually made it possible for you to offer the certification, and then we'll talk about, you could lead that right into a certification update.
Sure. So what's been happening here is since Colonial Downs closed, we have two sources of revenue. The revenue that the horsemen get from the ADW companies. We have four companies that operate here in Virginia. And also, when Colonial Downs left, the horsemen were given the ability to open the OTBs, which we have four new OTBs that have sent the industry a good bit of money, which has been great. So what we're hoping is that here we have the Virginia Equine Alliance running OTBs, and one of us has experience doing that, and they worked out pretty well. But now we've got people that are knowledgeable about gaming and the horse racing business, and those will be included. The Colonial Downs will have the ability to open 10 facilities around the state where there's been referenda approving that, where they can go ahead and put in OTB and instant racing machines. We call them wagering centers. And I think that they're looking to put in a very nice, comfortable, a large part of that wagering center is still going to be an OTB, which is something that's very important to us. While we realize that historic horse racing is going to be the large portion of the revenue stream going forward in the years, I think that, you know, it's all incumbent upon us to still be promoting racing and trying to get people to enjoy horse racing in a state where, you know, it's still a relatively wagering on racing, still a relatively new thing. So to lead right into our certified program, these OTBs that we have opened, and these will transfer, our OTBs will transfer to the new Colonial Down. We've been using part of those monies for the purses that we've been running races in Maryland. And then the other thing we've started in the last year was the Virginia Certified Program, where horses that come and reside in Virginia for at least 6 months before the end of their two-year-old year, if they do that, then their owners, when they win a race in New York, New Jersey, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Delaware, West Virginia, they're entitled to a 25% purse bonus on the win. And boy, that has been extremely successful, and can't tell you how much that is helping the farms and the training centers here in Virginia. We had about, I think we budgeted for 400 horses to join that program in the first year, and we had 700. That has been as big a positive thing that we've had going on in Virginia as anything we can do. So a lot of positive momentum. And then Colonial opening next year, I can't tell you how good everybody is feeling here in Virginia right now.
Deb, a couple of points out of these elements. Do you have a handle yet? And, of course, the sale, you know, the most recent yearling sale, but we're starting to see yearlings go through the ring, and there were a couple of two-year-olds in training just right from the beginning of the program earlier this year, but there was more of a chance for yearlings, and obviously there'll be even a better chance for two-year-old in training sale runners next year, next winter, spring. Have you seen results? Are there tangible ways to evaluate, you know, what it's meant for, you know, for horses that go through the ring that might be Pennsylvania breds, New York breds, with a Virginia certification that only further enhances their value?
So, of course, on the Virginia certified horses, the first, as you said, the first group of horses coming through are just yearlings of this year that are hitting the sales. But the same program we've been running on Virginia bred horses for Virginia bred horses for the last 2 years. And while I can't quantify that with exact numbers yet, when I talk to consigners, when I talk to the breeders, they are all so positive about what that Virginia bred, Virginia certified means, especially when you tag it on top of another state bred program. Let's just take, for example, Chester Broman, who breeds great horses up there in New York, but has a interest in a stallion he sent down here to Virginia. And every time he wins a maiden race in New York, we send him a $10,000 check. It is something that is from all our farm guys that breed and sell. They are finding that extra Virginia bred, Virginia certified tag on it is really, people are really starting to pay attention to those horses.
Nice. Well, we pushed what a brilliant strategy it was at the time, and you couldn't have known that things were going to come together so quickly, but it you know, really helped provide, I think, interest and momentum. One area that I talked about at the beginning of the show when mentioning you were going to visit, Northern Virginia, Deb, what has to happen for the population from, you know, Alexandria, McLean, and you know, up and down the border, for them to get access to horseplay? Because you've got so many transplanted people coming from all over the country to that region, and it seems like, I mean, that is a gold mine for potential handle, and it's been an area that has been impenetrable for horseplay.
So I think this is all going to be very interesting in the next few years. We have not been able to penetrate and get a referendum passed in Northern Virginia, and they're expensive to run. And so I think Colonial sort of lost the appetite for doing so. But I think that one thing I think we did smartly, I hope, when we ran this bill is that the localities are going to benefit greatly from the historic horse racing. When we look at, if you compare the deal Kentucky did and the deal we made, Kentucky puts a lot of the money into the Breeders' Fund, and while that's great and we'd love that, I think we looked at a little bit more for us the long-term benefit of what might happen. And so the localities, as I said, are OTBs were just feeding just the localities just a little bit of money, but this is serious money. And if that helps us get our foot in the door in Northern Virginia and opens that large population to wagering, I think that's for the long-term good of the industry itself. I think we're going to be in good shape. And so that's what we're all hoping. But we find out the politics and the different things. We know that MGM is not going to be happy about us being up there. We're already seeing advertising as far south as Richmond to, hey, come to the casinos up in Maryland. So it's not going to be an easy thing to do. It's a whole new deal. Our little OTBs didn't threaten big companies very much, but this is a different deal, and we'll see a whole lot more money going into politics and pushing things from even the out of state interest, which is going to make our life a little more difficult.
Well, one of the things that as I was looking yesterday for the final update, you made me aware that, you know, there was going to be the Virginia Racing Commission meeting to finalize the rules. And as I was looking for that update, I did find the story from a couple of weeks ago in the Virginia Gazette. And I did not realize, I mean, I knew there'd be some freshening and so forth, but I did not realize that the revolutionary racing partners that are going to, you know, run Colonial, that they had completely gutted the building, and they're doing a complete renovation of the facility. So it's going to be, you know, for those that, you know, that think, oh, well, Colonial Downs, this will be a new Colonial Downs.
Oh, and they're looking forward, Steve. They're really looking forward to making it a customer experience. And the people that are involved here, it's been a great group of folks coming down, but Brent Stevens, who's probably the main partner in this, was—I don't know if people are familiar—but was Peninsula Gaming, who built the new Evangeline Downs and the casinos that supported that. And so, what's very exciting for us is that we've got people with experience. They've hired people. The John Marshall, who's the new general manager, was Rand Calder during the days that the.
Sure.
That the slots came to Calder, and when they were having the little bit of a tension there between Churchill and Stronach. But we've got people with experience in racing and gaming so much more, to so much higher level than we had previous. And that's not a cut on Colonial Downs. It's just the fact that this is a company that's had that experience and doing it again. And I think that I hope that's going to be real beneficial to us.
Well, we look forward to, and haven't had John on the show in a long time, actually. You mentioned the days at Calder. But those that go to my feed, my Twitter feed from last night, you'll see the extensive piece, and you can see the work that's going in, and there's some artist renderings, and they're going to brand it Rosie's Gaming. They've got a whole approach for all the facilities that they're going to open, and there's an explanation as to why, you know, I couched the whole introduction of this discussion about the expansion, and the reason that there's concerns is because if you limit certain regions to a limited number of machines, it doesn't really support the expense of the infrastructure of building the facility. So that was the concern that was voiced yesterday, and you could sense coming from the commission. And I applaud the commission members, Deb, that were cognizant of that. You know, sometimes there's a disconnect between their sensibilities and their allegiances to state government and to understanding the needs of the business model. And those commission members clearly do understand.
They do, and unfortunately, in all of this, it's a political process, and I think that they were probably had their hands tied a little bit more than they would like. But we're very lucky. We have a great commission. I think, as you know, D.G. Van Cleef is the chairman, and I think you recognize Sarge Reynolds is another name whose family's been in the race business, and he's very involved, I think, with Woodford Racing, with Lane's End, I think Commissioner Miller hit it right on, and he heard it. People were worried about the overregulation before, and we're still concerned. But look, you know, we're far ahead of where we were, 8 months
exactly.
ago. We're going back to racing the Colonial, and we've got a new revenue source. So hopefully, if we do a good job and show them, I think that, as you go to places like. Down there at the Red Mile in Lexington, once people understand that, these places are nothing but a gaming, a gaming center, an entertainment center for people to go. It's not this just horrible place that folks envision. I think we'll hopefully be able to get some movement, because it was very clear with the legislature that they wanted to do something to help the horse industry in Virginia. Racing's expensive, and everything that to support racing is expensive, and so you've got to let the folks have the ability to make the money to make it all go like we would like to see it go.
Well, the work that's gone in from everybody associated with the Virginia Equine Alliance and the breeding community, the farm community, and all the working parts of this have been so dedicated, nobody more so than you, and that has been undoubtedly at the expense of your own business. But I did see that you scooped up a couple of yearlings yesterday at Timonium, a tri-tap and a giant surprise.
I have this terrible habit, Steve. I like racehorses. you've been one of our largest advocates, and we really appreciate it. And we hope we're going to be doing some of the right things. We hope we're going to be working with Maryland. You never know how those things work out, but I hope we can do something that's smart. The industry, we don't always do those things work together in a smart way, and we did it before, and I hope that's going to be coming again. And I just think there's a lot positive, and I hope you'll have the opportunity to get John on. He can tell you even more of their plans eventually. But I just think that I think we'll have some really cool things to be talking about going forward.
That's outstanding. Deb, appreciate it. I appreciate the update, and more than anything, the dedication that was just on display for everybody, and the work that went into it. And it's nice to see these efforts. You know, there's plenty of places where it amounts to tilting of windmills, but the equine history and legacy in Virginia, it was too important, and this was a terrific turn of events. So congratulations to everybody involved, and we'll look forward to Colonial reopening and then to Colonial racing in the fall of next year.
Well, thank you very much.
Deb Easter and the Virginia Equine Alliance, and we've kept up on this for, it doesn't seem like 4+ years, but it is, and a very satisfying conclusion yesterday, and more to come. Well, more to come into this second hour, and when we return, Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, and we'll talk a little bit about just a touch on the sales results from yesterday and Monday. There was also, not to be far flung, but there was also the Goff's Orby sale, and some fireworks there, including a $2.3 million purchase by Phoenix. They basically stole the sister to Alice Springs out from under Coolmore, a bidding war yesterday. pretty interesting. Watching some of it's international sales season too as well. So Phoenix just firing. Keeneland and Goff's and you name it. Arcana probably, and all the Tattersalls, all the other fancy names of sales companies. Sid Fernando joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.